Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and I'm very pleased to welcome back to our show one of the most gifted and interesting guests I've ever had the pleasure of interviewing. He spent two decades as a hugely successful television comedy writer and producer on TV shows including Bosom Buddies, Growing Pains, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Coach, and especially Home Improvement, where he served as executive producer and showrunner. He's earned multiple Emmy and Golden Globe nominations, as well as People's Choice, Kids' Choice, and Environmental Media Awards. But several years ago, he switched gears and discovered that writing books was an even more gratifying endeavor. When he last appeared on our show, we talked about his fascinating book entitled The Way We Work, On the Job in Hollywood, which is a collection of essays from award-winning screenwriters, directors, producers, and people behind the scenes, giving us an eye-opening look at what really goes on in the trenches of the film and TV industry. I said it then, and I'll say it now. This is one of the most frank and astute books about the realities of show business that has ever been written. But our guest's true passion is writing fiction. His first two highly acclaimed award-winning novels, entitled Elevating Overman and Cascade Falls, were, for me, about figuring out what really matters in life, living life to the fullest, and healing our pain. His latest novel, entitled I Buried Paul, is a touching and insightful story of a middle-aged musician searching for creative fulfillment in the context of family, lifelong friends, and the enduring power and appeal of the music of the greatest band in history, the Beatles. In his writing, our guest demonstrates a remarkable ability to convey wisdom and important life lessons in a profound, witty, and heartfelt way. I'm also very proud to say that I consider him a dear friend. I'm delighted to welcome back the brilliant Bruce Ferber to our show. Bruce, thank you so much for being here.
Harvey, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me back. It's great.
Bruce, I must tell you that I really loved your book, and I'm wondering how a successful Hollywood comedy writer who never had a music career was able to navigate the world of over-the-hill musicians who never really hit the big time. Where did the inspiration for that story come from?
Maybe from being over the hill. You never know. Musically, I've been a music, passionate music fan my whole life. Everybody who grew up around the time the Beatles came into being, every guy wanted to be a rock and roll musician. And every guy that I knew, if you weren't a football player, and I didn't have the size for that, even though I loved football, you got yourself in a rock and roll band. And so everybody was in a garage band. Everybody wanted to be the Beatles when they grew up. And, you know, I guess becoming a writer was as close as I could get to that. I mean, I play music. I'm an amateur. I play a lot of different instruments, not particularly well, but I enjoy them. And, you know, I just have a passion for music and a passion for the Beatles.
Are any of the characters based on real people?
Oh, yes. Yes. The guy who plays the John Lennon of the band is based on a guy who I grew up with, from the time he was 8 years old, he was going to be a star. And, you know, in this day and age, especially now with all of these reality shows and, you know, everybody wants to be a celebrity. Well, even in those days, you know, you had these kids who were precocious and wanted to be in the theater. And this kid wanted to be a musician, and I knew him, and he was mega talented, this guy. And he was just one of many who never got to the top, but really had the goods. And everybody thought he was the star, in school.
Your book is, in a very real way, a love letter to the Beatles and their music. Tell me about the impact of the Beatles and their music on your life.
Well, I mean, as I said, when they came on the Ed Sullivan Show and people saw this phenomenon for the first time, the Beatles were our Elvis. I mean, the Beatles were, they were something new. They were something that we'd never seen before, that everybody kind of plugged into. And, you know, to see them progress with their own talent, album after album, you know, each one became more interesting and more complex. So we followed them right up till the breakup in 69 or 70, I guess. And I think it changed everyone's life who was a music fan at that time.
Bruce, I'm not going to delve into the plot of the novel because I want people to read it for themselves, but I do want to explore a number of themes that emerged in the story. The first one is about parenting, and in particular, parental acceptance or the lack of it. Jimmy and Eddie's father, Lou, was a band leader and musician whose talent was obviously inherited by his sons, and Lou was instrumental in Gene's music career. But he took absolutely no pleasure in any of that. He was not supportive of their music careers because he was disillusioned and bitter about the music business. On the other hand, you have Gene's parents, Phil and especially Marcia, who are totally supportive of their son's music career ambition. What's the message you're giving us about parental acceptance of their children's choices in life?
You know, I mean, I did not set out to give a message. I set out to portray families the way they are. You know, Jimmy's father, even though he's really hard on his kids wanting to be musicians, it's coming from a real place. It's saying, you know, I'm barely hanging on at this job. It's like every parent who wants his children to be more than he is, the father. But he I guess didn't believe strongly enough that they could be more than he was in that profession, because that profession was so tough. So, I mean, in his own way, he was trying to protect them. He didn't do it the best way. And then in the other family, they're trying to protect this kid too, because they recognize at a very early age, this is what the kid can do. He's ADHD. He can't concentrate in school. He's not meant for an office job. I mean, if this is his passion, let's encourage him, because this is the thing that he has a shot at really enjoying, you know, for his career.
Now, staying with the parenting theme for a moment, we have the issue of how to introduce an adult child to a biological father whom she didn't even know existed. Jimmy has a daughter, Kaylee, who was the product of a very brief relationship many years ago with Kaylee's mother, Lori. Right. When Jimmy finally gets to meet Kaylee, the experience isn't quite what he hoped it would be.
Sure.
Tell me what your thinking was in including this subplot in the story.
I think all parents, myself included, we all have expectations for our children, even if we raise them, you know, right from the get-go. It's not like when they're born, you expect them to be a doctor. There are some parents like that, but I was not one of them. But You have certain expectations. And, you know, in the case of Jimmy, who has not seen this girl for a long time, he has built something up in his mind. He hasn't seen her at all. He's built something up in his mind. And it's not even like it was about success or about anything like that. He just had a vision of how he would be close to his daughter, which is, you know, I mean, the things that a lot of parents, myself included, we want to feel close with our children. And so even though he hadn't met her, his fantasy was that there would be this immediate bonding. And the fact that she was willing to go and see him made him even more excited to have him come see her, made him even more excited about who she might be.
Another theme that runs through the book is, of course, the realities of trying to make a living in show business. At one point, Jimmy says, and I'm quoting you here, "The key to maintaining a good attitude in this game is being able to recognize and hang on to the snippets of magic that cross your path." Bruce, was that true for you in your show business career?
Of course. Of course. There were always things that were just such a pain about being, you know, a television writer. I used to say that we spend the entire week listening to other people tell us what we did wrong. And so, in other words, on Monday, you would have a table read of your script, and the network and the studio may, or the actors may say, this doesn't work. This is terrible. You know, throw this out. And then so on Monday, it could be the actors. Then you would have a run through on Tuesday, and it could be the studio. Then on Wednesday, the network could tell you they don't like it for whatever reason. And this would go on and on. And then you'd shoot the show and the show would be magic. And you'd say, you know what? I know what this process was. Sometimes they might've been right with their notes. A lot of times they were probably wrong, but I'm just going to sit back and appreciate the laughs, these lines and this actor, what they're getting, and just sort of bask in that.
Well, based on your description of Lou's, Gene's, Eddie's, and Jimmy's careers, I think it's fair to say that the image you create in your book about what it's like to try to make it big in show business is depressing. What advice do you give to young people hoping to pursue a career in the entertainment industry?
My advice would be to really pursue your craft. Make yourself the best you can be. And in a way, like Jimmy says in the book, low expectations, because look at the reality. See, you know, when I was coming up, there were basically two big film schools. They were USC and NYU. And you also had kind of UCLA at that time, and SMU had a program. But now you have tons of film programs. Everybody wants to be in show business. So your odds are, they're low. As one of the actresses in my book, The Way We Work, said, she said, and she is so talented. She was in the Broadway touring company of Les Mis. She said, if she had it to do all over again, she wouldn't be, she wouldn't pressure herself to be a professional actress. She would do something else and be involved in community theater because she could get her stage Jones satisfied, but would not have to suffer all of those auditions and the indignities and all that stuff. You know, so, but if you are going to do it, you got to be tough. You can't take it personally, but you got to never forget that it's not about being a celebrity or being famous. It's about the work and being as good as you possibly can. And even then, it's a long shot.
Yeah, those words are spoken from somebody who certainly knows what he's talking about, people. Another prominent theme in the novel is love. There's the love and hero worship that Jimmy feels for his older brother, Eddie. There's the unconditional love Marcia feels for her son, Gene, and his love and devotion to her. Right. There's the love that Jimmy feels for a married woman, Christina.
Right.
You wrote something very profound in the book about love. You said that the only accurate measure of love is the willingness to withstand an equal measure of pain. Bruce, I know you've had more than your share of heartache and tragedy right. in your life, but how in the world do you come up with lines like that?
I don't know. I really don't know.
It's jaw-dropping. I had to stop and reread that about four times to really absorb what you were conveying in one sentence.
I really feel that, Harvey. I really feel it because, and I guess I know how I came up with that. I came up with that because when my first wife passed away, I was faced, you know, everybody faces, how do you want to grieve? How are you going to grieve? It's not even a matter of want. How are you going to let yourself grieve? So the way I chose to let myself grieve was to just let myself feel the pain and just not walk away from it and just break down if I needed to break down. And the line that I came up with, and it wasn't a line, but it was just something that I told myself, was that I'm doing this and it's painful, but she was worth it.
Wow.
So that's, I guess that led to this line.
Well, for me, it was the most powerful line in the book, and it's never going to leave my consciousness. And I thank you for that.
Thank you.
I can't resist asking you, Bruce, Jimmy's favorite authors are T.C. Boyle, Russell Banks, and Isabel Allende. And at one point in the story, he's reading Love in the Time of Cholera by Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Right.
So I have to ask you, who are your favorite authors?
Well, T.C. Boyle, Russell Banks. Allende was my late wife's favorite novelist. We both loved Marquez, and we both loved that whole kind of magical realism, South American writing. But I just have so many friends. Nabokov is great, and I just read one of his books, And the name is escaping me right now, but it was a flat out comedy. It was great. It was absolutely great. Yeah, I mean, no, I tend to like realistic American work. You know, there's a writer who I actually did a book event with. His name is Dan Shawn, and he started out writing these sort of odd Midwestern short stories, and he's kind of gone more into the horror genre. But he's somebody that I've enjoyed for a really long time.
Well, I got to tell you, Bruce Ferber is one of my favorite authors right now. Would you like to see the book made into a movie?
Absolutely. Why not?
So would I.
Why not? You know, this book, I have to say, one of the nicest things that happened to me, you know, our mutual friend, Billy Van Zandt.
Oh, yes.
So I was having lunch with Billy and I said, Billy, do you think your brother would like this book? And his brother, of course, is Steve Van Zandt from the E Street Band. He said, I think he'd love it, but, you know, I don't know if he'll read it. And I said, okay. He said, but you know what? I'll send it to him. He'll probably look at it and see it's for me and he'll be too busy for it. And then one day I get a text and it says, your book is my brother's book of the week on, you know, his Twitter, all social media and Sirius XM, whatever. And so Steve loved it. And if he was wanted to get involved, that would be very cool.
And who would he play? I'm thinking Gene.
Okay, he wouldn't play any of those people. I would, you know, actually, I'm thinking about it as a limited series type of thing. And what I would love for Steve to play, and he doesn't know this yet because I haven't talked to him, but I would love him to play a manager. He's the manager of this band. And because this is like Steve in real life, the reason he manages any band is because he really believes in them. And he knows that they're like a Beatles tribute band, but he thinks they're really good. And he thinks Gene's really good. And he thinks Jimmy's really good. And he's a guy who just goes to the mat for all of his musicians because he knows how hard it is. So that was my idea. So Steve, if you're listening, that's your character.
Okay, Billy, you've got to get this video to Steve. I think it's a great idea. I would love to see the book made into a movie or a miniseries. Now, Bruce, the book ends with a number of unanswered questions, like the following. Will Jimmy have a successful solo music career? Do Jimmy and Christina have a future together? What's going to happen to Gene? And will Jimmy and his daughter, Kaylee, have a strong, loving father-daughter relationship? Those are just the questions that come to my mind. Sure. So my obvious question to you is, will there be a sequel to I Buried Paul?
You know, people ask me this with every single novel I write, and I always say probably not, because I always want to do something else. It's like I started writing novels, you know, late in life, and I have all these different things I want to explore. And, you know, if I wanted to make money at this game, I would have created a detective and done, you know, 25 novels featuring the same character. But in a way, Harvey, that's what I did in television. I wrote episodic television. So it's the whole idea of doing an ongoing story. You know, if people said, this is a movie, this is a miniseries, would you adapt it? Sure. I mean, it's another challenge. It's a different form. Or if, you know, a major publisher picked it up and said, you've got to do another one of these, I might try it. But my first instinct is to pursue something totally different the next time. That's what I've always done.
Well, I got to say, I'm sorry to hear that, because I got attached to these people. Didn't you?
I did. I did. I really did. When it was over, I felt like I missed them, you know?
Yeah, I miss Marcia. You know, I think it's not fair. I really want you to tell us what happened to these people. There's just so many questions. And but did any of these characters surprise you as you were writing the book?
Always, always. I mean, that's, you know, when writing novels is the best. I mean, the thing about novels versus TV is that you do not have to know everything that's going to happen in your book. And, you know, you discover things along the way, like the big ending I discovered along the way. I didn't know what it was going to be, the big concert at the end. I knew there was going to be a big concert at the end, but I didn't know how it was going to resolve, how it was going to relate to the plot. I didn't want it to be too easy. And it turned out to be emotional. And it was a great, great find. And the other thing I found in researching, and this was just a kick, and this led me to knowing where my concert was going to be, is that one day I found myself, you know, doing my Googling, and I said, I wonder if there are any towns in the United States named Liverpool. And the first one that came up was Liverpool, New York. And I said, okay, that's going to be part of my ending. And so the surprises were the best part, seriously.
Well, I got to tell you, you are such a joy to read. I want to tell our viewers that you can learn more about Bruce Ferber and his books, and you can also read his blog by going to his official website, bruceferber.net. Well, Bruce, it's been a real pleasure having you back on the show, and I wish you every success with the book, which I absolutely love. I can't wait to have you back on the show with every new project. You know, you're always welcome.
Thank you so much. And I just want to say that my publisher is talking about doing a holiday Kindle special for like $4.99 or something like that. So can't miss there if you're a Kindle reader. But the hard copy book is beautiful, and you can see the cover is just beautifully Beatlesque. And the blurb on the cover is from, in my mind, the definitive Beatles biographer, Bob Spitz, who wrote the best book about the Beatles ever. So he liked it, so maybe you guys will.
Well, so everybody out there who's looking for the perfect gift for your friends who happen to be Beatles fans, this is the book to buy them. They will love it, I promise you. Thank you so much, Bruce, for taking the time to appear on our show.
Thank you, Harvey. Really appreciate it.
Our guest has been the mega-talented and prolific writer, Bruce Ferber, whose latest book, I Buried Paul, is now available wherever books are sold. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to our producer, Steve Silver. Thank you to my wonderful managers, Rick and Robin at the Marcelli Company in LA, and to my team in the UK. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.